Welcome to UK Perspectives. I'm guest host Julie Rinn, director of the Kentucky Women Writers Conference, taking place on September 20 through 23rd. Founded at UK in 1979, the Women Writers Conference is the longest-running event of its kind in the nation. We feature workshops, panel discussions, and readings by poets, novelists, nonfiction writers, and playwrights. One of them is my guest today, Julia Johnson. Julia Johnson is the author of two poetry collections, The Falling Horse, published this year by Factory Hollow Press, and Naming the Afternoon, winner of the 2002 Fellowship of Southern Writers New Writing Award. She grew up in New Orleans and recently became Associate Professor of English at the University of Kentucky. Julia, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me here.
I'm going to jump right into the theme of your writing workshop for the conference this year. It's called Ekphrastic Poetry. Can you tell us what that means?
Well, there are some well-known examples of ekphrastic poetry. Two examples that I like to mention are by W.H. Auden and William Carlos Williams. These are poems inspired by Peter Bruegel's 16th century masterpiece, Landscape with the Fall of Icarus. In the painting, the focus is on a farmer plowing his field. Meanwhile, in the bottom right corner of the painting, one can barely see the legs of Icarus as he plunges into the sea. Auden and Williams were drawn to Bruegel's treatment of the Greek myth, how he played down the death of Icarus and instead emphasized the workaday efforts of the farmer. The example is particularly interesting and is used a lot in classes because, of course, Bruegel, the painter, was inspired by the myth, and so art is always inspiring art. William Carlos Williams and W.H. Auden both had very different approaches to the painting, and the poems are very different, but they're both on the same subject. So those are examples of ekphrastic poetry. It's really poems that are focusing, I think, now in contemporary poetry especially, it's poems that focus on works of art, usually paintings, photographs, or statues.
And I believe for your Women Writers Conference workshop, you're planning to take your students to the UK Art Museum, is that right?
Yes, and one of the things we'll do is a kind of, I guess, similarly to the example that I just mentioned, I'm going to have two students write on one piece of art, just to see how they might enter the painting or sculpture or photograph differently, how they might approach it differently in their work, whether it's writing from the perspective of a figure in the painting or drawing or sculpture, or whether it's telling a story, creating a story that may or may not exist within the, you know, just the sort of the one-dimensional painting or piece that they're choosing.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you, as a native of New Orleans, you've probably been following the news of Hurricane Isaac very closely. You are also working on some poems about Hurricane Katrina, is that right?
Yes, actually, today is the 7th anniversary of Katrina to the day. It's the 29th, so it's a little bit eerie to think of Isaac coming in and causing turmoil. I am actually finishing up a manuscript entitled Subsidence. It explores the natural and human complexities of the ever-changing and vulnerable Gulf Coast. And we are sort of witnessing that firsthand as Isaac whips his way through and probably takes some of the land with him as he goes up north.
So visual art, geology, it strikes me that you are somewhat unique in the poetic subjects that inspire you. How do you know when you've found a subject for a poem? Or more broadly, can you describe your writing process?
This is a hard question to answer. I think it's hard for artists to answer it. But I'm absolutely inspired by language. And so geology came about because I actually found on our table, I happen to be married to a geologist, a dictionary of geological terms. And the terms, the words themselves are so fascinating to me So I find that language triggers subjects for me. In the same way, visual art will trigger a subject. I'm sort of, I guess I start with that rather than starting with maybe a memory or a personal experience. I start with the term, the language that is of interest to me, and then I will sort of enter in some of the more difficult subjects like Katrina. It took me a long time to be able to write about Katrina because my hometown and also my family was directly affected by it, and so it took me a while to be able to write about it. Mm-hmm. I think some poets are able to do that more immediately after something traumatic happens to them, mm-hmm. and then other poets are not maybe as easy, you know, as it doesn't come as easy to them. So I think that for me, I have to find something, whether it's kind of like in the way someone like Anne Sexton used fairy tales to write about her own experience.
Well, that's what I love about your most recent collection, Naming the Afternoon, is that it is unique. There's not a lot of autobiography in there. So I find that fascinating, the way that you choose subjects for your poems. So thank you for exploring that difficult question with us. I wanted to ask you, earlier you mentioned, actually one of our earlier conversations before this interview, you mentioned your course Introduction to Imaginative Writing, which has, I believe, around 60 students enrolled. Probably most of them will not go on to careers in writing poetry. How do you hope they will benefit from your class?
Well, it's a really exciting course. It's exciting in that we have literally, you know, there are actually currently two sections. So there are over 100 students now enrolled in an Introduction to Creative Writing course here at the university. It's a core course, and so it's a requirement. So we have lots of engineers, lots of biology majors, chemistry majors, students who wouldn't normally or typically sign up for a creative writing class are in there. So it's really, I find it really exciting. So, you know, we've had two class meetings, I think, so far. And what I find is that these are students who have very little experience with reading poetry. Many of them have almost no experience with writing poetry. And so they're kind of wide-eyed. I mean, it's amazing to be able to teach these students poetry and to introduce them to something that I hope will be a kind of lifelong passion, that if I could teach them anything, it's to appreciate not only poetry that's, you know, maybe been, you know, older poetry, which I'm introducing them to, but also new poetry. And, you know, we're able to watch poets read on YouTube and listen to poets on poets.org, the Academy of American Poets site. So it's like they realize, I think they're able to realize that it's so accessible now. It's everywhere. And I think that is something that is really exciting, to be able to, you know, tell a student, look, you can listen to a poem on your iPod.
Yeah.
instead of, you know, whatever else they're listening to. So that part of it is really cool. And then, you know, maybe a small percentage of these students will go on to take classes in creative writing, you know, higher level classes in creative writing. But there's so many students in the class that you kind of think, well, you know, I am maybe doing something to spread the sort of the word of poetry.
Yes, I'm sure you definitely are. And I do expect it to be a lifelong source of enjoyment for most of them, hopefully. I wanted to ask, the Women Writers Conference welcomes men to all of its events, but we only feature the work of women writers. How do you think women writers benefit from having a conference of their own?
Well, I feel like I can really answer this question well, because I attended an all-women's college called Hollins University, which is kind of famous for its writers. It's very famous for its writers. Our current poet laureate of the United States is a graduate of Hollins. Her name is Natasha Trethewey. And the graduate program is co-ed, I should mention that. And she was a graduate student at Hollins, not an undergrad. And I was an undergrad at Hollins when Natasha Trethewey was a graduate student. But I think that it's important for women to have a space, a kind of venue, a forum for discussion, whether it's political discussion or whether it's literary discussion. It's important for women to be able to express themselves in a venue that is specifically for women, even if there are men in the audience. I think that for all different kinds of reasons, in terms of the subjects that women writers tend to write about, and also so that it's a kind of an even playing field or ground, whatever the term is. I think that for so long, literary discussion and literary conferences have been male-dominated, even though the conference, I know, is quite established and quite old. I think that it's actually rare. I don't know how many conferences, how many women are there?
There are some. There are some, but they tend to come and go. I'm not sure that there are any that have persisted as long as we have. So I really do think that this is an accomplishment of the University of Kentucky and the Lexington community that people should really be proud of for keeping this going. Now it's our 34th conference.
It's amazing.
Yeah. There is also a disparity in the number of books by women that are reviewed in leading literary publications, and even the reviewers themselves. More men are hired to review these books than women. There's an organization called VITA, Women in the Literary Arts, that was formed a few years ago that has started tracking these numbers, and they're surprising because, you know, you tend to think that those disparities aren't there anymore, but in fact they are. So it's great for the Kentucky Women Writers Conference to be able to play our part in celebrating the work of women and helping it to be more widely read and reviewed. Our guest has been Julia Johnson. For more information on the Kentucky Women Writers Conference, please visit our website, www.kentuckywomenwriters.org, or call 859-257-2874. Our complete UK Perspectives interviews are available at wuky.org. For WUKY, I'm Julie Rinn.